As we observed this morning, from the first 12 verses of Ecclesiastes 9, one event happens to all people. If you're wicked, this event happens to you. Even if you're righteous, the same thing happens to you. Ecclesiastes 9 and Hebrews 9 both identify this one event as death. But the whole book of Ecclesiastes, as well as Hebrews 9, show what happens after death. We notice this morning how Hebrews 9:27 says that it is appointed unto men once to die, and then he said after that is the judgment. Now, from chapter 9, verse 13, all the way through chapter 11, verse 6, we're going to find Solomon dispensing many pieces of wisdom before he reaches his grand finale, which, Lord willing, we'll look at next Lord's Day morning. So, how can I live successfully until I meet that one event that is common to all people? Well, here's what Solomon says. First of all, let's look at the poor man's wisdom in verses 13 through 18. This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. And then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise, spoken quietly, should be heard rather than the shout of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Wisdom is great, but unappreciated, and it is not honored. And proof of that, Solomon said, is I observed one time where this great king, obviously with a great army, came against this little city. It just had a few men in it. And they built all their siege works around it, and they attacked the city, but there was one man in the city, a wise man, but he was poor. And by his wisdom, he delivered that city. Did the citizens of that city remember him? Did they honor him? Did they really appreciate what he did? Solomon said no. So from that scenario, he concluded three things. While wisdom is better than strength, it is despised. Number two, nevertheless, we should still listen to the words of the wise, although they speak them quietly, rather than giving heed to the shouting of the ruler of fools. Just because something is shouted doesn't make it more true. And just because something is said softly does not mean it's not true. And thirdly, he said that wisdom is better than weapons of war, and yet one sinner can destroy the much good of the wise man. How sad that whole scenario is. Wisdom is so much better, and yet the world just doesn't appreciate wisdom. Now we move into chapter 10, verses 1 through 3. Wisdom versus folly. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom. And he shows everyone that he is a fool. This illustrates how one sinner, or perhaps in this case, one sin, can destroy much good. Would you buy perfume that had dead flies in it? So in the same way, he said, a little folly, just a little folly mixed in with the wise man's wisdom can ruin it, or ruin him and his reputation, and hence turn people off. So a wise man's heart is at his right, that is, it's his strength, although he might be poor. And the fool, his heart is at his left, or his weakness, although he might be rich. And Solomon continued to say that the fool, when he goes about his business, reveals to everyone his foolishness. It's obvious to everyone except for to him. And he doesn't get it. He can't figure out why all these other people see it, and yet he cannot. Instead, what Solomon now observed in verses 4 through 7 is the exaltation of folly. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post. For conciliation pacifies great offenses. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants. The exaltation of folly. In spite of what Solomon said about wisdom, going back to verse 13 of chapter 9, and how great wisdom is, how much better than weapons of war it is, yet people still don't get it. And they act foolishly and exalt folly. And this is true, he said, of rulers, such as when they become angry. And they do things that they shouldn't do. And so in anger, we might be tempted to resign in protest, but Solomon said, don't do it. Have the spirit of conciliation, for it pacifies great offenses. Rulers sometimes exalt folly and servants and humiliate the rich and princes. They get things all mixed up. And a good example of that is to remember Mordecai and Haman in the book of Esther. And I'm not indicating that it was wrong for that to be done in that case, but there's a situation where a rich prince was humbled and one who is really nothing more than a servant was exalted. And it happened just in a rage, with the king in a moment of rage, boom, he reverses things. And that can happen with people who have great power in their hands. However, now, still speaking about wisdom in verses 8 through 15, he does show us that wisdom brings success. He who digs a pit will fall into it. Excuse me. And whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. If the axe is dull and one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength. But wisdom brings success. A serpent may bite when it is not charmed. The babbler is no different. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. A fool also multiplies words. No man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what shall be after him? The labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to go to the city. I think you can just sum up that whole section there by saying that wisdom knows how to bring success. Because, first of all, the wise are aware of dangers. Yes, they know that if someone digs a pit, that they might fall into it, that if you break through a wall, something might happen to you, a serpent might bite you, that if you quarry stones, you might be hurt by it, if you split wood, you might be endangered. They know that. So second, knowing of the dangers, they know how to use their tools. And thirdly, he showed that they know how to charm the babbling fool. So they know how to deal with the difficulties and dangers of life. Rather than letting it frighten them and cause them to go into hiding, they use wisdom to deal with these things. So rather than just talking like the fool does who multiplies many words, they get things done. For they don't know what comes later. You know, I could spend all my time talking about it right now, the wise man thinks, but if I get busy and do what needs to be done, then I can be prepared for whatever comes next, which I don't know what it'll be. Whereas talking doesn't really prepare us. Verses 16 through 18. Here is wisdom in leadership, wise leaders. 16 through 20, he said this. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry, but money answers everything. Did you know that expression came from the Bible? Do not curse the king, even in your thought. Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. Foolish leaders have no experience, and so they don't know when to feast. They feast when they should be working. But wise leaders have had training, and they know to feast at the proper time and to do it for health rather than for selfish purposes. Lazy leaders have no evidence to show for their work. And so the building falls apart, he says. The foolish and lazy leader believes, though, that just pouring more money into it will fix everything. Is there a problem? Don't fix it by wisdom. Just pour money into it. See, that's their thought at the end of verse 19. That's not Solomon dispensing to us wisdom. Don't just think money answers everything. That's how the foolish leader thinks. Hey, I can feast when I want. I can be lazy. Verse 18. No problem. I'll just throw more money at it. And that'll fix it. And so they don't know how to sharpen their axe, so to speak. And they humble other leaders and exalt folly just to show their power. Don't tell me what to do. Because I'll do this or I'll do that. However, Solomon warned us, especially in verse 20, do not use bad leaders as freedom to curse them or to criticize them. We don't want to be like Brother Monkey Wrench. Okay, you know, there's a plan, there's a project, and it's as though someone's got a monkey wrench, and he just can't wait till you're done. In fact, he may not even wait till you're done. And he throws in the monkey wrench. And just shows why it won't work. So he warns us against thinking that way. In fact, he says, do not speak it. Do not even think it. Because what you say will get out and what you think will come out. Now let's look at this last section for tonight. Chapter 11, verses 1 through 6. I believe what's going on here now is, you know, Solomon's just, you know, like we noticed this morning, he's talking about this one event that happens to all people. So between now and that one event, here's some wisdom. Live by this and this and that. That's what we've just been looking at. Now he continues that dispensing of wisdom, but I believe what he's doing here is he's beginning to blend it in with what he wants to say at the end. And that's what we'll look at, Lord willing, starting at verse 7 through the end of the chapter 12 next week. He's going to take the wisdom of how we should look at tomorrow and set us up for his grand finale, a great truth that he wants to implant in our hearts, as we'll notice later. So here now, in verses 1 through 6, he talks about preparing for tomorrow. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to 7 and also to 8, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and in the evening do not withhold your hand. For you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Give, and it will come back to you. Now it might be a long time before it does. And it might even seem like it will never come back, just like if you put bread on the waters, and then it disappears, and you think you'll never see it again. But Solomon, by the Holy Spirit, guarantees that you will see it again. Sometime again, you will experience it. Therefore, give to 7, he said. Are you thinking that's enough? Well, go one more. Make it 8. For you don't know what will happen later. I believe what he's showing here is that by investing in people, you know, take what you think about investing in finances, you know, like for your retirement or something you want, you're saving for or whatever. You know how that works. What works like that with people also, only in my opinion, and I think I could establish it biblically, it's an even greater return. Even as you invest your money and get more back later, so if you invest in people, you will get far more back from people than you ever thought. In other words, the rate of return is greater by investing in people than it might even be investing in money. He said, clouds drop rain and trees fall down. However, you have to do something with them. The rain comes down. I mean, God just says, look, I know you need water. He just dumps it on us. Now we've got to do something with it. Otherwise, you know, it'll go down into the soil, but a lot of it will just run off. It'll go into the rivers and it goes back out into the ocean. The tree falls down. It's not going to cut itself up into lumber and make a house for you. There it falls. It falls to the north, he said, or to the south. I may have gotten that in reverse. Maybe, did he say south first? Doesn't matter. But yeah, if it falls to the south, or it falls to the north, you're not going to come back tomorrow and see it lying over towards the east. It's there waiting for you to use it. Opportunities in life are like that. God just showers us with opportunities all the time. Are we using them? Invest in people especially. And then he said, you know, on top of all that, even as we cannot figure out the way of the wind or how a baby grows in the womb, so we don't know what God is doing. Hence, what he shall prepare for us tomorrow. Now, you know what today's been like. What is tomorrow, Monday, November 9th, going to be like? He's up there in heaven. We can't see him. But I believe that's one of the purposes of the book of Revelation, is to show that behind the scenes, he's working. So what's he doing? I don't know. We have some general ideas, but specifically, I don't know. I don't know what he's preparing for each of us tomorrow. So, you know, give to seven. Well, give to eight. Cast your bread upon the waters. In the morning, so. In the evening, so also. Look for every opportunity to do good. Whatever good works you can do, or whatever investment in people that you can make, if you only make it in one person or one thing, you know, he says, you never know. That one person or that one thing may fail. So if you sow, sow all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, through all the people that you can, in all the places that you can, at all times that you can. Then you will reap from sources that you never imagined. The longer I live my Christian life, and I've been a Christian, this November 2nd, last Monday, I've been a Christian for 33 years. And I think I can really see what Solomon's saying here, especially in verse 6, but I'll just say verses 1 through 6 as well. He's right. Cast your bread on the waters. It'll come back. It'll come back in ways that you never would have dreamed about. It'll come from sources that you never would have guessed. So then, from chapter 9, verses 1 through 12, we observe this morning that we should make the most of life now. Enjoying every part of it that we can, remembering that our lives and our works are in the hand of God. Now, tonight, from chapter 9, verse 13, through chapter 11, verse 6, Solomon has showed us how to make the most of life. This morning he said, make the most of life. Now here's how you do it. And that will prepare you for what he's going to say in this last section of the book. So then, if you have lived contrary to biblical wisdom, you know, now is the time to repent and to follow the wise guidelines of the Holy Spirit on living. Why make life difficult? Brother or sister, do you need our prayers tonight? You know, I love praying. I love speaking to God. And I love it when someone says to me, Don, can you pray for me on this matter? Yes, I will. And I think this whole congregation thinks that way too. Do you have something that we need to be praying about? You let us know. You come forward when we stand and sing, and we'll be glad to pray for you now, but we'll also pray for you, you know, during the week or at other times. Come forward now as we stand and sing.